All right. Good morning. This is a meeting of the CORA Working Group. Today's date is September 30th, 2016. It's 10 a.m. We're meeting in the Secretary of State's Aspen Room. Why don't we go ahead and just go around and introduce ourselves so that people listening at home will know which voice it is. This room's not wired quite as well as the Blue Spruce because the microphones don't move very far. So do the best you can. It's not necessary that we really get an accurate recording, but it'd be nice to get people's comments on the record. I'm Suzanne Steyer. I'm the Deputy Secretary of State.
There we go. Peg Pearl with Colorado Ethics Watch.
Elena Nunez, Common Cause.
Jennifer Anderson, Legislative Director for the Attorney General.
Stephanie Mann with the Attorney General's Office.
And Chris Cobrel, Fox 31, CBA.
Lauren Gustis with the Coloradoan and Colorado Press Association.
Jeff Roberts with the Colorado Freedom of Information Coalition.
Jeff, please don't get any of
myself. Steve, that's great.
Jeff Ross with the Green Power.
Yes. Jeff Roberts with the Colorado Freedom of Information Coalition.
One more.
Jason Myers, City Attorney for the City of Fort Morgan.
Cole West, State Representative, House District 37.
Ron Carl, Arapahoe County Attorney.
Michael Valdez, Special District Association.
John Kafalis, State Senator, Senate District 14, Fort Collins.
And I don't know what everyone's schedule is, but since we have Representative West, I thought maybe we would start with the ADR outline, talk about that. We're having lunch brought in at 11:30, so if anybody is interested, we can work through. I'm hoping that this is our last meeting. We already have a lot of election activity spun up, so I'm probably out till of this world for a couple months. All right, so I don't know if everyone got a chance to look over the outline. We have sort of outlined what an ADR process would look like. And let me just say, maybe at the outset, we did send out this outline, and we sent out our draft discussion version 3 to the government council section at the bar and asked for feedback. We had a lot of really positive comments about the ADR and about, in fact, I don't think we got a single negative comment. A lot of people thought that that would really help to resolve a lot of issues and help the local governments with their attorney fee issues. So I think it's important that we include it. And then we also got a lot of good feedback on the work we did from last year's draft, people comparing sort of what they had last year with what they had this year. And we feel like we're at the point that the government council section will recommend to the bar that we support it, and then the legislative policy committee will make that decision. But we felt pretty good about the feedback we got, and we didn't really hear anything negative. Seems like, you know, there's some support for it. So that being said, I don't know if anybody else reached out to their stakeholders and got comments. But, you know, with respect to the ADR, I don't know if anybody wants to start with more general comments about concerns they had from their stakeholder groups.
This is Jeff Roberts. I could start a little bit. We had a lot of discussion about the proposal, and generally we're very excited about having some sort of alternative dispute resolution process. As we've talked about before, there are many, many cases we think where both for news organizations and ordinary Coloradans out there, they end up giving up instead of trying to litigate to resolve a dispute because of the upfront cost factor and just, you know, the intimidation factor, I think. So we're really excited about it. I think what we would like to see, we'd like to see how this would work. We'd like to try it out. And so what we'd like to propose is a two-year trial period where we have a completely voluntary system of mediation. We set it up kind of like what's talked about in the draft. But we would like to see how, you know, if it actually is something that people use. And it's also an opportunity at that point to collect some information, to collect some data about how many cases actually go to mediation. Are they resolved successfully? How many end up being litigated anyway? And of those that are litigated, you know, is there an awarding of attorney's fees in that case? And then, you know, once we sort of see how it plays out, we see how it works, then we can see whether there is a reason to adjust attorney's fees. If the point of adjusting attorney's fees is to encourage the use of mediation, well, maybe that won't be necessary if it's used, if this shows that it's actually used anyway. So that's our sort of general thought about this. We'd like to see how it works. We're excited about that.
Go ahead, Ron.
Yeah, I did reach out to the county attorneys, and I didn't receive any negative comments, so I think that people view it very favorably. The one concern I had was on the fees involved in mediation and if there's a way to make sure that those don't get out of hand. And so, okay.
Well, Representative Wist, what do you think?
Are you putting me on the spot?
Well, I could tell you what I think first.
I think we're on the right track. I think anything, any solution that results in less litigation and more dialogue between parties is always positive. I think the idea of a two-year trial period is intriguing, but I'm concerned about the mixed message that a trial period would send, that we're not particularly interested in this as a meaningful deterrent to litigation. I certainly don't want to send a mixed message. The objective here is to decrease the amount of litigation and increase the speed in which disputes are resolved. But I think the proposal is on the right track, and I just want to give kudos to everyone involved in this proposal, and think that we're definitely on the right track.
One of my concerns is I think that if the mediation program is entirely voluntary and there's no adjustment on the attorney fee side, that we may drop some support on the government side, and not necessarily because they feel like they, because I think these proposals are somewhat tied together. At the point that we start adding new definitions to CORA and new responsibilities to CORA, people have a much easier time accepting that, knowing that if they guess wrong, they're not necessarily going to get hit with attorney's fees. And so, you know, there's a stop in between where, you know, the parties can work it out. But if you put a whole bunch of new definitions and new obligations in CORA, and the only place to really resolve them, if either side chooses not to go to mediation, if the only place to resolve it is in court, then, you know, the government people are back to the same place and the clerks are back to the same place, which is, you know, feeling like they are behind the eight ball every time they get a CORA request, which is what we heard in some of our more supportive statements that from people who actually do this work and not necessarily the attorneys, but the clerks often who process this, that I could finally feel like I could, you know, breathe a sigh of relief because I can just process a CORA and not have to worry about attorney's fees every time I do so. So that's one of my concerns about not having it be built in.
I think having it not mandatory is a big mistake. I think all disputes need to be channeled through ADR. and that needs to be a prerequisite to applying for attorney's fees. If you're going to have a meaningful alternative dispute resolution process, everyone needs to go through it.
Yeah.
Thanks. Yes, I just wanted to say from Ethics Watch's perspective and based on the experience we have ourselves and the citizens that we've talked to, I agree with Suzanne that these things are kind of tied together because to the extent we do make CORA more complicated or we go into digital type of areas, I think it makes sense that we need to have a place to have disputes resolved. We're talking about things such as how the document is produced in addition to just producing the document or not. And I know that we've certainly been in this situation where is it really worth suing, going to court over getting a paper copy of something versus an electronic copy. But if we can go to mediation and talk it out and therefore have some also long-term, I think, effects of educating everyone about what the law is and getting kind of long-term compliance so it just doesn't become a fight every time, you know, that's a much more palatable thing to do. I think that the actual outline as written here is not quite reflective, I think, of what we discussed last time, because I agree with Representative Wist that it needs to have the incentive on both sides to go to mediation. So just like if the requester has to go to mediation before they can go to litigation for possibility of attorney's fees, I think that the custodian, if they have this unable to determine sort of 6A kind of question of I'm not sure, I think they should have to go to mediation too. I don't think we should be making it one-sided in terms of who goes to mediation first before litigation, with the slight exception of the substantial injury to the public interest. I understand that that's one place where we might need to go straight to court just because of the interests that might be in place from the custodian side. But the unable to decide issue, I thought one of the points was that the custodian doesn't have to actually sue the requester in court when they just don't know the answer, we can go to mediation and kind of work that out, hopefully. So with a few tweaks to the outline to make sure the incentive structure is set up a little more balanced, I am, you know, and our organization is in favor of the proposal going forward, and as long as the incentives are, like I said, aligned, I don't have a problem with something that's maybe because of the cost issue, that we do have maybe not necessarily a trial period, but maybe a sunset or something where we can reevaluate costs at some point. I'm a little afraid because of fiscal notes and just because of other things that we don't want to kind of have an open-ended, unlimited program. And I think we discussed last time either in terms of capping the number of mediations per year or, I don't know, something that we could do for an initial period of time just to kind of deal with that since we're not sure how much it'll be used. And there is a cost issue, as has already been brought up. But that's sort of where we are in this right now.
Senator?
Thank you, Suzanne. One question I have is, I noticed that this proposal is looking at setting up the dispute resolution board within DORA. And I thought the last time we had talked about trying to minimize additional sort of government bureaucracy. So I have a question about that because obviously that'll drive a fiscal note. I thought we had talked about, and I think Representative Wist was presenting some examples that there might be a community-based framework that could be established. So that is a question that I have, if someone could respond. And also with regard to what Peg just said, in terms of the striking a balance between a two-year trial period, I mean, as you all know, we could, if we come to some agreement, we could establish either put a post-enactment review clause in here or set this up for, you know, a certain number of years and then do a sunset review, either way.
Well, let me respond to the issue about the association. I talked to the Bar Association about the bill and about the ADR aspect of it. They have an alternative dispute section, sort of like the government council section or, you know, these other sections that they have, but they don't actually do any, you know, alternative dispute resolution. They have members who are members of groups that do it, but they're all private, you know, ADR groups. And so it would actually be, if we're paying, you know, cost, And Jeremy down at the representative from the bar told me he'd be happy to schedule me or Representative Wist or whomever in front of the ADR group to talk about it a little bit. But he said they, you know, that they, like the other sections, it's not like they get 100% participation. They get, you know, 6 or 7 people who show up at the section meeting. So, I mean, we can explore that. I just don't know where we're going to, I guess, find the resource privately.
Sure. And if I just quickly respond, I also engaged the I think he's a professional mediator, Mike Madej from Colorado Springs, with the Mediation Association. And he actually had some preliminary feedback on this draft that might help inform the discussion.
Oh, okay.
So just sharing that.
Yeah, I don't think anybody was necessarily.
I just want to speak for a minute from out here. I'm from the Mediation Association of Colorado. I'm here because Mike was not able to be here.
My name is Kathy Head, and I'm here from the Mediation Association of Colorado. Mike Madej was not able to be here today because he's out of town, but he did send a written response, I think, to the outline that you provided to him, and we did have a couple of concerns about the wording of that, and I don't know if this is the place to go through that in detail, but
I'm not. Well, I don't.
Do we want to make copies and distribute, or do we want to?
We can do that. Yeah.
Oh, you have them. Okay.
I mainly just wanted to let you know that the Mediation Association is being represented here, and we do have a list of private professional mediators who would be interested in being considered for this process.
And what's the typical, like, hourly, or do you know? Do you have an average?
It varies 120 to going up from there, I guess.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that's part of the issue. We talked about, I mean, the funds have to come from somewhere, so I guess it doesn't matter where you technically, quote-unquote, house it, but if we're talking about paying somebody at an hourly rate of, you know, 120, 150, and we're only asking each side to put in 25, then there's obviously a delta there.
Right. Yeah. And this is Peg, and I think I recall from last time Representative Wist brought this up as well. One of the things we were talking about, similar to I know what happens with the Attorney General having to bring in, let's say, outside special Attorney General because of conflicts counsel and such, is if this were something that a private mediator or somebody who has this type of experience wants to apply for, that there's some sort of set rate that we're paying, you know, from the government, from the legislation, and under a sense of, you know, government service and semi-pro bono, et cetera, it wouldn't be market rate. I mean, this would be a discounted, you know, and you would not be making your living off of this 100% all year. You also don't know if there's a list of 12 approved or, you know, mediators through CORA a year. You might only get one case a year. Who knows? And so it's almost more of a roster of potential folks who would be willing, if called upon, to do something at a much reduced rate, not 100% pro bono, but at some sort of statutory rate or something that we could set in the fiscal note, not that it would be market rate.
So I don't know that I was necessarily under the outline thinking we were going to set it up in DORA. It was just that there was discussion about who was going to decide what mediators were qualified. So you have to have a board do that. Well, if you're going to establish a board, you got to put it in an agency. The board members aren't compensated, but some agency has to host the board, basically. And then some agency has to be responsible for the payments to the mediators. So I don't know if you had a different vision, Representative, but that's the only reason we picked a agency.
Well, I'm envisioning a process where we have private resources coming to help us resolve a public problem, and that is we have a lot of resources within the community that could be contained within a panel of professionals that can help us, you know, in this area. So I've always envisioned this as a public-private partnership, and we have a lot of resources in the community. Let's use them. Much like it can function much like the American Arbitration Association's panel of of arbitrators in various substantive areas. So I think that approach makes a lot of sense and would help us to, you know, address your concern, Senator. And I think that's exactly right, that we want to minimize the fiscal note that's associated with any kind of proposal.
Ron?
Yeah, I just want to clarify something because it wasn't clear to me from the outline. So the concept here is that the mediators would not be paid by the parties to the mediation?
Each party would pay a fee.
Okay.
Like 25 or some 50.
Minor
fee to participate.
Okay. Yeah.
And then the rest of the costs would be picked up by...
So the problem to solve is how to get those costs picked up, either volunteered or picked up by the state.
So basically we're saying try to get it as low as we can, and then that minimizes the fiscal note.
Right.
So.
Right. And again, from a perspective of the fiscal note and using, to the extent we have some government dollars making up the difference between, let's say, $50 total and the whatever the agreed upon reduced rate is, along the lines of saving litigation and the litigation costs to the taxpayer, that the court system, obviously, that's all, you know, borne as well. So I know that doesn't translate directly in the fiscal note, but at least from a policy perspective.
Right. And that is one of the issues, is it doesn't translate directly, but I think municipalities and counties and state will save money in legal costs. They'll save money in attorney's fees. There will be tax dollars saved as a result. I'm just not sure they'll be calculated into a fiscal note. So that's the creation of the dispute resolution board, which we had discussed. Does anyone have any comments on how we would select this board or the membership?
This is Peg. My overarching concern is just to not make it too difficult. Again, this is going to be a voluntary issue for folks who are agreeing to kind of serve. And I don't want it to be, first of all, I would not want it to be something like just a one-year term where then we'd have to reappoint this board every year. I think it should be a little bit longer so it doesn't have to happen. And I wouldn't want it to be just too difficult and too complicated in terms of the requirements of the board, other than coming up with, I like how there's a little bit of a spread here, obviously, to represent different perspectives on CORAs, but I would just hesitate from getting too very specific on the seats and on the length of service so that we aren't in a position where it's hard to fill the seats.
And this is Chris Gobrel, Fox 31. Just one of the concerns on the timeline at the bottom of page 3, top of page 4. As written, we're talking about 10 working days. We'd like to see if that could be whittled down to the same time restriction that the CORA currently requires, and that's 3 working days.
Where is that?
Bottom of page 3 as written, top of page 4.
Oh, so he's on the mediation procedure.
Oh, okay. So if a person denied the right to inspect records, filed mediation.
Right, no earlier than 3 working days.
Okay. All right, so on the board then, your suggestion, Peg, is to get rid of like staggered terms and term limits and just let somebody appoint and...
Well, my suggestion would be to do something like maybe a 5-year term or, you know, at least 3-year term, I would say, because you don't want to be reappointing the board every year. And, yes, I would not go complicated where we'd have staggered terms, because then at any given time you could have an empty seat. If it's only talking 4 people to begin with, having 1 empty seat I think is a big deal. So just to minimize administrative hassle and being that it looks like your department actually would have to do some of the administrative hassle on making these appointments. So I don't think you would want to have to be doing that every year. And don't worry about it being that complicated.
Yeah, go ahead.
Suzanne, thank you. Michael Valdez, STA, a couple of quick things. One, selfishly, on the first section.
Sure, creation. You want your, I got it, SDA.
SDA, and that, adding folks to the consideration for the list. And if appropriate, school boards. The State School Board Association to recommend someone there. And then I just had a quick question as to the getting to 4 board members and not an odd number of board members. Is there something magical about 4 or?
No, I think we were just trying to keep it small because it's hard to get together and there are duties of the board. Go ahead, Senator.
I'm just thinking about conflicts.
Right.
Another suggestion that has come to my attention is that since this is a dispute resolution board, there may be some logic in having a mediator on this board with expertise in that process. So it's something to think about.
Okay. Yeah.
This is Lauren. And if you look at page 4, as I understand it, the subsection under attorney's fees, first subsection in any action in which the parties participated, and then the second bullet point under that, the burden of arbitrary and capricious is different than the current standard. And I just wanted to check on that and see if we felt it was a higher standard that we were asking folks to get to, and do we do that with intent?
She's over here. She's over here.
Oh. Oh, okay. Yeah. Looks flipped, right? Yeah. Okay.
But she's asking about arbitrary and capricious being higher than current law standards. So.
Yeah, I mean, currently the law says that you get attorney's fees automatically. But in an action where the parties don't participate in mediation, then you would only get attorney's. I mean, there still has to be an attorney fee provision. I mean, even if the parties refuse to agree, then the burden becomes different. Because you refuse to go to mediation. So if you refuse to go to mediation, you only get attorney's fees if you can show that the government was arbitrary and capricious.
This is Jeff. If you go to mediation and it's not resolved, I think it's that section, they participate, unable to resolve. Right now it says the standard would be arbitrary and capricious. Why wouldn't we keep the current standard?
Yeah, that one we would. Yeah,
so this is not worded right. Correctly. Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, I was just pointing out to her, I think two of the bullet points got flipped in the typo. In the typed up.
Which ones got flipped?
Well.
Sorry.
Okay. We were still talking about the board, I thought, so I wasn't there. Hadn't brought that up yet. So I think the way that we discussed it last time is if the parties go to mediation, but they're unable to resolve, then the standard for attorney's fees for the petitioner would be the current standard, which is prevailing applicant in an amount determined by the court. If the parties do not participate in a mediation, I actually think there's two standards depending on why they didn't participate. So if they participated because the requester wanted to go but the government said no, then I think that it should be the same normal CORA standard. Requester did everything they were able to do. But if they didn't go to mediation because either the requester didn't file it and went straight to court first, or because the government filed it and the requester said no, that's where this arbitrary and capricious standard comes in.
Right.
I think that's what the bullet points are supposed to be lined up to be. So there's actually like three possible scenarios depending on why you weren't in mediation.
I have a question whether it would make sense to have an attorney appointed by our office on this board. The Attorney General's office. Sorry, I forgot we were on the record.
Would that work on, I mean, could that be the one under the state agency? Could that be state agency or attorney general? Or are you saying you should have state agency and attorney general?
I'm saying I think it makes sense to have just a state agency employee who is not an attorney, and I also think it makes sense to have an attorney appointed by the attorney general potentially, because it doesn't look like there is an attorney on here currently.
Right. Well, I mean, all the board's doing is
appointing mediators.
And I think an attorney might lend some expertise in that area.
Okay, well, then maybe we should have a member appointed by the attorney general. We're trying to keep the balance. So as soon as we do one, then we're going to do one on the other side.
I think that sounds like that would work, and it could be an attorney then at her discretion.
His discretion.
This is Cole West. I think that's right. I agree with that. I just want to caution everyone about these different legal standards for the awarding of attorney's fees. It's going to be terribly confusing to the bench. The objective here in having ADR is to drive disputes into alternative dispute resolution and not have them be in court. And I want to reiterate where I started, at least on this issue, and that is that ADR has to be a process with teeth. And if you don't make it mandatory, I'm concerned that people will not use it. And secondly, the standard for recovering attorney's fees should require that a party attempt to go through ADR. You're not required to resolve the dispute. You may sit down for 10 minutes in a mediation and decide that there's no prospect whatsoever for resolving it. But I remain firmly of the mind that recovery of attorney's fees requires that you avail yourself of ADR.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're fine with that on the government side. We just thought on the requester side, it seemed they still wanted the option to go straight to court and have some potential for recovery.
I think there's the possibility out there still that there's some sort of abuse going on and that a mediation in that type of situation would not be a productive process. And so to me, it seems like if there really is some sort of misconduct or bad faith situation going on and the requester thinks that they need to just go to court because they're bad actors, that there should be some, there can be some consequence for that where they don't automatically get fees. But at the same time, if the court recognizes, yes, these are bad actors and it's, you know, definite bad actions going on above and beyond, that there could be then some outlet for attorney's fees in that situation. That I think that's where this little piece is coming from. I don't know that how often that's going to happen, to be honest, but I think that's where it's coming from.
I don't know that you lose that argument at all if you go through ADR. I mean, none of the ADR process is on the record. It's entirely excluded under Rule 408. All I'm saying is everyone should have to go through this initial step to force people, frankly, to sit in a room and talk about the nature of what their dispute is. If someone is not participating in that process in good faith, I think that will become apparent pretty quickly. And then the parties can proceed to litigation just like they always had. But if the objective here is to reduce litigation and all we do is provide an option, and we have a number of exceptions as to why folks don't have to go through mediation, I'm concerned that this will be a process that will not be used and we'll be right back where we started, and that is that all of these disputes are in court.
I just, Jennifer Anderson, Attorney General's Office, I just want to make a quick comment about our experience with disputes related to CORA, because in general, we are often able to resolve those disputes just discussing them with the requester initially. And so I think the only, I mean, I would hope that this mediation process, I agree with you, Representative Wiss, that it's important. And in those cases where it can't be resolved just through communication, and another step before litigation is important. But you could also have that unintended consequence that more things go to mediation that could have otherwise been or would have otherwise been resolved through just discussion with the requester early on, like they currently are.
And I don't want to belabor this, but you know, my understanding is that you don't get into mediation unless there's a dispute. I think you always have the opportunity for there to be informal dialogue between the requester and the governmental entity. It's only when a dispute essentially arises from that interaction that you would then go to ADR as the next step, and then litigation is essentially the third step in the process. So I think your point's well taken. We don't want to formalize this so much that we discourage informal communication from happening and from common sense hopefully prevailing.
This is Lauren, if I might just piggyback. You know, we work with agencies every day on CORA requests, and I'm always going to look to have that conversation first to try to even work out of the CORA realm if we can before we go down the CORA road. So, yes, certainly, to your point, you know, we would want to have that conversation before we went to mediation, before then, you know, God forbid we had to go beyond that. And I think, practically speaking, that's how most responsible agencies would work.
Yeah, and this is Chris Coberl, and I totally agree. It's a three-step process. Your first step is informal communication and discussion. Your second step is mediation. Your third step is litigation.
Right, I know. Okay. Peg wants me to get back to the board.
Page one.
I love to walk through pages in order. I'm sorry.
All right, so here's where we ended up with the board. There'd be one person appointed by the AG, one member that represents local government, and then there'd be sort of the requester, and then a member of the press, and then a mediator. I think your fifth could be the mediator, because that would be the neutral, right? Okay, so those would be the five.
So the AG appoints or
replaces the state. Yeah, okay. Does that work? All right. Okay, and then we have duties and powers. What you got, Peg?
I didn't say I had to go first. I just wanted to go the papers in order.
Can I just clarify for the record? We didn't suggest that our member be replacing the governor's member, just so it's clear for the record.
That's fine. I don't, you know, otherwise we got to have then an extra person.
Right. I think just to keep it even, and if I don't know how it's going to be specified out, obviously, in drafting, because this is just outline, not the pretty stuff that Bob Lackner or whoever is lucky enough to catch this is going to make look on bill paper. But I would say that third bullet point, the Colorado resident who's not an employee, that person could be an attorney on the requester side too, potentially. Who knows? Right. But I agree. You can have the attorney general appointing someone that would be more the government custodian side attorney. My main comment on duties and powers sort of stuff was, again, to kind of keep it simple in terms of, because this is an all-volunteer group who probably will get together maybe once a year or more if they have to, I didn't want it to be too draconian of the procedures they would have to set up or the forms. I know that they're going to have to sort of take some applications in and tell people, okay, here's the going rate. Do you accept it? Give us your qualifications and approve people. But I just, and this is more, I guess, how you drafted in the bill. I don't want it to be too much of a heavy lift and how much, like, they have to do regulatory, you know, rulemaking power or anything like that. That was my main concern.
Anyone else have anything on the duties? I mean, I think some of this can be worked out in drafting, more general concepts, but okay, then at the procedure for mediation, I guess here we get to the point of, well, I guess the mandatory issue really has to do with the attorney's fees. But so, Peg, I think you wanted to do a change, which I'm fine with. It might just not be stated well, that if the custodian believes the record, that they don't know, right? Is that where this one comes?
Right. I would move basically from what we have on page 3, the bullet point saying if the custodian is unable in good faith to determine if it should be disclosed, I would move that here as an area where the custodian would file and take that question to mediation. And I think actually here is a question a little bit for what Representative Wist was saying, if we're using may versus must about it, and it's just how you set it up, if you're just making it a consequence of attorney's fees, or if you're saying the custodian must, because I am concerned about setting up a situation where incentives are such that the requester always files for mediation, but the custodians never do. And so that's my concern, because the custodians never, you know, necessarily have, if the custodian side is just may, but the requester side is must, I don't view that as a proper system.
So you're saying that the custodian, if they are unable to determine, then they must file?
I'm saying that if the only time the custodian should be able to go straight to court is if disclosure of the contents of a record would do substantial injury to the public interest. Every other time, they should go to mediation first.
Okay. And if they don't, then it's attorney's fees.
Right. We have to figure out what the consequence would be, but it would have to be realistic consequence that would make them do it.
Right.
So.
Okay. All right. Anyone else have anything on the procedure?
This is Jeff. On page 2, where we talk about, just right at the top there, about a denial or a partial denial, then you can start the mediation process. There are other issues that can be disputed as well, like cost fees can be disputed, and we're obviously talking about format of records. Would we be including those types of issues as mediation issues as well?
I mean, I think anything that you can sue under CORA, right? I mean, yeah, if you can sue under CORA and say the fees are too high, or if you can sue under CORA and say I didn't get it in the format I wanted. Yeah, I think that those should all be together. So it's not just denied or partially denied. Ron?
Yeah, I agree. I have a comment on the procedure. I wonder if we shouldn't have a section that allows for parties to do private mediation if they want to. There could be various reasons why they
right. Yeah, I agree.
Want to go through their own process.
The parties could mutually agree on a mediator.
Right.
They may want to use somebody in Durango. And
right. If they're far away from Denver, it may be easier for them to.
I mean, hopefully we'll get people in Durango, too. But
yeah,
whatever the issue is, they can agree to their own or they can choose off the list. Okay. I agree. You taking notes since Megan's not here?
And this is Chris Cobrell. Just to clarify on the private mediation, so if both parties agreed, hey, we have a mediator that we can both agree on, you don't have to go through the board certified.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you'd have to pay for it yourself then, right? But yeah. Okay. All right. Anything else on that general concept? All right. Then that takes us to the appeal. And I think we've fixed the switch in the bullet points. And this is really where I guess we get back to. Oh, you did. Okay, go ahead.
Sorry. The top of page 3 before that, when we're talking about Rule 408 and stuff, this is where about what's admissible or not, including if there is an agreement coming out of a mediation that later is breached by somebody. I don't have the answer here, but I want to just note again, and this might be part of what you heard from the Mediation Association. I haven't had a chance to read this copy yet, but we do have in CRS 1322, sort of 301 and following, we have definitions, and we have the Dispute Resolution Act. We have definitions of things like mediation and definitions of things in terms of what's acceptable or admissible, all those kinds of things. So just as a drafting note, I would note that all of that should be taken a look at when you're looking at here as well, because I think it incorporates these concepts of 408 and everything into the statute in places, is my understanding, especially if we do want to say something about an agreement then could be enforced by the district court, and I'm not sure that that's exactly how it's handled in other places. So you might need to look and see how that's handled and if we want to do the same as what's elsewhere or something different.
This is Cole West. I want to clarify that Rule 408 doesn't preclude someone introducing evidence of an agreement in a subsequent proceeding to enforce the agreement. All 408 says is that these specific negotiations or discussions of the parties in the course of attempting to resolve a dispute are inadmissible for substantive purposes in a later proceeding.
So maybe we could just leave out the exceptions because they're already accepted.
I think that's right.
Okay. All right. Okay, that takes us to appeal. I think we're going to get back to the main question of, a couple things, and I guess we can. I don't think we're going to have a group consensus. So. On the issue of whether this is going to affect attorneys' fees whether it's going to be mandatory. I mean, it sounds like we're not going to get full agreement on that. I mean, I think from the government side, we want it to be mandatory in order to collect. On the requester side, we're going to hear that some, not you, you're fine, that they want a more of a pilot program. So I don't know. I think that's for the sponsors ultimately. I mean, we can take a straw poll if you want, but I don't know what to do with that. You all are going to have to decide, you know.
This is John Kafalas, Fort Collins. I'd like to give that some more thought. And my first inclination is that we, in terms of putting some guardrails on this or a time frame, that we look at either a sunset review kind of thing in 2 years, perhaps, or a post-enactment review clause. That's my reaction, but I guess I'd like to give it some more thought and consult with all of you.
Yeah, and I'm not sure we would mind the sunset review as long as much as maybe I mind the voluntary part where there's no relief for attorney's fees. So, I mean, they're kind of two different issues. If you wanted to review how well it's gone in 2 years, I have no, you know, I don't have any issues with that. But, yeah, go ahead.
For those of you who are more of a pilot program, what would that look like? Shane Madsen, for the record.
Well, I don't know that we have a lot of particulars about that, but what we were thinking was some sort of sunset review, that type of thing, or, you know, something that allowed for an examination of how well it's worked to determine.
So it would be mandatory during that period?
What I had talked about originally, what didn't get a whole lot of support around the table here, was something voluntary.
Okay.
This is Cole West. I think if you want to have a meaningful review of how effective ADR is, make it mandatory. Sunset it after, I think Senator Kafalas is right, sunset it after a certain period and do the analysis, but make it mandatory. Look to see if the amount of litigation has been reduced, because I think that's the overriding goal here, is to drive this out of court and into, you know, private resolution. But if you make it a permissive process, I'm not sure that you come away with clear guidance one way or the other.
So this is Jeff, and I think that would be really interesting to look at. It might be difficult to look at because, as I understand it now, you can't get a firm handle on the number of CORA cases. I've asked this question of the court administrator's office. Can I know how many CORA cases there have been over the last 10 years, year by year? They don't have a code for that. So you'd have to go through every civil case to figure that out. So it might make that analysis difficult. I wish it wasn't difficult.
This is Ron Carl. Maybe we can get the court system to create a code.
Yes.
As a way to help track this going forward.
Yes.
I have an additional comment. Suzanne, I think one of the things you've been trying to get at is the fairness of the attorney's fees provision as it exists, that I think the government counsel currently feels a little unfair in that even though we might have a good faith dispute, if we lose, we have to pay. And I think I would still advocate that we, if we can, find a way to reasonably soften the attorney's fees provision no matter what we end up with, so it's not the case that the count or the government always pays if it loses, that there's some higher standard. But
yeah, I mean, ultimately, that'd be great. I mean, what we're doing here is not even necessarily changing the standard. We're just making you stop along the way. And I think that it's bringing the parties together so that hopefully there's resolution, and you know it's a lot easier when you're a sophisticated requester or you're a sophisticated agency. But the people that this really hits a lot of times are the kind of panic that sets in when somebody from a special district gets a CORA request or somebody from a small town, and they just don't understand the law, and truly, I think sitting down with someone who does, who can make them less afraid will get them a long way, especially when it comes to these electronic records, because there has been such a fear on the part of the custodians that we are going to release something that we shouldn't. And I'm afraid to give it to somebody electronically because I don't understand what they can do with it, and I don't understand whether they can manipulate it in a way that, you know, is inaccurate or whatever the issue is. I think if you sit down with somebody who does understand that and they explain it to you, and then you feel better about it, and you have an order reduced to writing, which also protects you as a custodian in the release, because there's someone else that, you know, oversaw these recommendations. And so I just think that that mandatory process is really going to improve the relationships between the requesters and the custodians, and it's also going to give a lot of those custodians peace of mind, which is what we heard over and over again in the feedback that we got. And I think, as everybody who's ever worked on CORA knows, we in government are very hesitant to change it, and I still don't think, even with this, that we're going to get support of all the different government agencies. The question is whether we're going to get enough of them to kind of get over the hurdle. And I think we're, you know, our agency's at the point that we can support this. Government Council appears to be at the point at the bar that they can support it. Sounds like CCI, you know. I mean, we have a lot of people that are going to come out for it, but I think we'll start to drop some if we don't do something with the attorney's fees.
This is Jeff. I just want to make one point, and then I won't keep going on about this. But isn't it right that there are very, very few cases where attorney fees ended up getting awarded?
Well, don't know, because there's no number at the state courts.
So that's true, but you know, anecdotally, I don't think there are very many of them.
Well, and there aren't, but there's this. I mean, you've never been on the custodian side, but there is this just almost attitude like I just got served with a summons and complaint. It's almost like I just got sued just because somebody files a CORA. There is a feeling that, you know, somebody is now adversarial to me, and that's what we're trying to make go away. And so even though it might not happen that often, it also has happened to some places that don't have any money. You know, I mean, like Swatch County paid, what, $100,000? They don't have any money in Swatch County. Chafee paid on a CORA. Mesa County paid. Jeffco paid $150 on it. I mean, I could name again and again, but the ones that it really affects are the ones that have, they're either self-insured and they're paying this themselves, or they have these, you know, high deductibles. But, you know, this is money out of taxpayers' pockets in counties and small places that don't have money. And that's a very scary thing, to be a clerk in Swatch, you know, where you can't even build a road and get a CORA request. I mean, quite frankly, that's, you know, a huge part of their budget. And so there has to be something to give some peace of mind to these smaller places, that there is somewhere to go to redress my fears, that be irrational or not. You know, if you don't fix it, they're going to exist.
And if I could follow up, this is Jason, to illustrate that in a different way. What we're asking currently is some of those smaller municipalities, special districts, which might only have a budget of $2,000, is you understand that there might be releasing information that I'm not allowed to release, and I can get sued over that. Or I can tell the entity or person coming for the CORA request that I can't release it and get sued over that. And so I'm either looking at attorney's fees for that, or the likelihood of maybe somebody else may or may not care whether or not I release this information that I'm not supposed to. So that puts the clerk in a very, very awkward position. And I think if we were to adjust or some degree, then it takes that burden off of the, you know, the clerk of a board or of a small town, of not having to feel like they're under attack and that they're going to lose either way. And so hopefully taking the gamble of just giving up the information that they shouldn't be under the law, as it currently sits, is less of a risk than doing what the law says and not releasing information.
Well, and hopefully the, you know, setting up this mediation program, and this is why we were talking about before how these two things are linked, creates that a little bit of a shift in perception, right? And so necessarily it's not all of a sudden now I'm adversarial and we're going to be in court fighting out and I'm on the hook for attorney's fees, because presumably we can, again, resolve these things maybe through mediation instead and never have to get to the attorney's fees. That's why these things kind of go hand in hand. So, and I mean, from the perspective of putting aside maybe organizations, but certainly from the perspective of a citizen out there in whatever town they are, in big or small, at the point that they're requesting a CORA, just remember the custodian is really the one who holds all the cards. The requester doesn't have the documents. They don't have the city attorney or the county attorney. They don't have CML or CCI advising them. They're just a person out there. So the only thing that they have under the current system is that if I go to court and I front the costs for court, I can maybe get that money back. They never make money on it. It's not like they get, you know, any fines or anything. So there's a reason the system is the way it is now. I think when we're shifting, the reason I'm, you know, that our organization is looking at being, you know, amenable to changing the attorney's fee structure is because we're changing the system by putting in the mediation process and things like that. But there's a reason kind of the system existed the way it did, because the requester had nothing else as a citizen out there. But I think the mediation program hopefully will, in general, change the dynamics on both sides so that the custodian doesn't have to feel like I'm being attacked and the citizen doesn't have to feel like I have no rights. So hopefully overall it helps.
All right. The one thing on the procedure for mediation I kind of wanted to get a feel for is how do people feel about the resolution schedule? I don't want to make this just something that drags it out for anybody. Right now at the bottom of page 2, we have it at 2 weeks to schedule. I mean, I think we can put something in there unless mutually agreed upon. I mean, that's fine, but I mean, it's 2 weeks workable, or do people want to push it up 10 days or 2 weeks? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, Chris Coburn, I think as long as we have that 3 days notification that we discussed, then 2 weeks. So your maximum time, you're looking at, 13 working days.
Okay. Okay. All right. Anything else on appeal?
If we could go back to the 2 week, is that 2 weeks to get a mediator to resolve the issue and meet? And is that feasible for a list of people that they can drop their schedule in that amount of time? I think it's a great cutoff, 2 weeks. But we're anticipating that a private person is going to have the flexibility in their schedule, not necessarily that the government can't make it happen or that the requester can't make it happen, but this third party being available on a two.
Right. Well, and I think that's why it would have to then be if you mutually agree, you know, so I think the solution would be you guys mutually agree on a mediator and that mediator says, sorry, I'm in Europe for a month. Then if the parties don't mutually agree to kick it out a month, then you need to go down on the list. I mean, I don't know what else to do with that when you're using private.
Right. This is Peg. I mean, my thinking is if we have a list of 12 to 15 mediators, well, part of the application process is you tell people, okay, here's the process. We want scheduled mediations within 2 weeks of when a dispute arises. You know, here, just like saying, here's the price. So, I mean, it's kind of a little bit of a they agree when they sign up. And then in general, you know that from my perspective, for example, if I was one of the parties looking at mediation, I'd say, okay, these 15 people have been vetted and approved by a board that's, you know, fairly composed of people of all sides. Personally, I'm probably just going to call who's closest to me and just start calling and see who's available first. Like if you don't have, I mean, unless you have a personal reason to, you know, pick one over the other 15, like that might just be the reason you pick somebody is who is available in the next 2 weeks. So that's why we want to make sure that there's a nice list, but hopefully we put it as one of those conditions of getting on the list is that you agree to be able to do that.
Would it be appropriate then if the list is only 12 to 15 and to have some language that says if nobody on that approved list is available, then as soon as possible or something to that effect.
Well, and I think that's what you were just saying, or if the parties agree otherwise. So that would be something where you guys say, oh, okay, we really, this first person on the list that can meet, it's, you know, I don't know, January 1st, right? And people are doing things, then you work it out. Yeah, I think we should add that language. I agree.
Right. Anything else on appeal? All right, then do we want to take a 5-minute break, and then we'll come back and talk about that final language? Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm going to go off for five, Steve.
So the way I understand this is we're basically back to where we were Tuesday, right? Mm-hmm.